David the Professor.
Meu nome é José Emílio Monsasso. The agenda of the members before us. Two items today. we deal with the social amendment bill. And the second item, we're trying to align something that has been allowed, but we're in a corrective phase of the entities which are not doing the productive work. Something I still don't understand why it's happening. I think we can complain now. We're doing it. Yeah. We're going to spend the quarter of money to take us through on the social amendment. Sorry? Are you ready?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to you. Good morning to all the members. Good morning to officials from the government and SASA. My job, just quickly, Chairperson, is to go through the summary of the submissions that we received on the bill so that the members, when the presentations of the public hearing next week come, you will be in a better position as to what they are putting forward to the committee. So I thought, Chairperson, just to start, after having read the submissions and I did a little bit of reading for myself, that I briefed the committee on the two policy positions that influence the submission. And maybe to try and explain, there are two, social protection and child protection. These are important that members understand because the submissions, the arguments put forward, that also are reflected in the bill, that based on those two positions. I'll just explain it at all. So social protection by definition in terms of UN. It says all measures providing benefits in cash or in kind to guarantee income as a key issue and access to healthcare. So that's what social protection is according to the UN. Then child protection, this I took from the UNICEF, just for the reference, it refers to prevention and responding to violence, exploitation, and abuse against children. Okay, so if you look at now the definition and the foster care, then foster care falls under child protection. Why is this so? According to Children's Act, Section 181, subsection 1, it says a child is in foster care if the child has been placed in the care of a person who is not the parent or guardian of the child. Section 181A then says, it says that the purpose of foster care is to protect and to nurture the child by providing a safe, healthy environment with positive support. So foster care as a system is meant to protect the child in a safe environment and with positive support. Therefore, other social plans are for social protection. Remember, child protection is about securing the income of a child. So other grants are there to protect, like the child support grant, to be relevant to the topic. The child support grant is a social protection. Foster care as a system, not necessarily talking about the grant, but as a system, is for the protection of the child who is in need of care.
Outside parental guardian. Outside parental guardian.
Yes, Chairperson. Yes. Okay. And then there are grants, other grants except the child support grants that also include the other grants are for children. There's a care dependency grant, there's a foster care grant, disability grant also for kids, but for now we're looking at the child support grant and the foster care grant for the purpose of the bill before us. Then the child support grant is a means-tested grant. That means caregivers or parents' income is means-tested and it should be fall below a prescribed threshold. In this case, when I looked, it said it's 48,000 a year for a single person. And if it's both parents or caregivers combined, it's 96,000. So anything that goes beyond that as income, then the child doesn't qualify for child support grant. And that grant is easy to apply and is not subjected to student requirements as post-secondary grant is. Post-secondary grant is not means tested, but it has to go through student processes. The social worker must go and assess the environment at the home of the person, of the child, and develop a report, and that report is the one that goes to court, who then now the court will decide in terms of granting the court order or not, basically approving the application for such a case.
This is my name. Those are mine too.
Okay, Chair. As I just explained now, the COSAC is meant to provide a safe environment for the child. Then, in putting it in context, what happened? There was a HIV and AIDS pandemic that happened, and that resulted in a sharp increase of children who were orphaned. And those children, they needed to be looked after, and most of them they were looked after by their relatives, either grandparents or aunts or whoever was available to look after the child. So in 2002, the minister then is going to make an announcement that the foster care grant be extended to include children orphaned due to HIV and AIDS. And this was meant to be some kind of an incentive also as to assist their families who now have to look, like, for example, a go-go now has to look after the green children. So to give some means of financial support, now the foster care grant was extended to include these children. So immediately then that was attached to a sharp increase of children in the foster care system, and that now is attached to the backlog that we have, because now the judiciary and the social welfare system cannot cope with the demand. Remember, the welfare system, social workers, we have a shortage of these. Now we have to now go visit the children, do assessment, take that to court, and then go to give award in the application for a social worker. So that increase in numbers resulted in that backlog that we had to deal with. And the unfortunate implications of that, or the result of that, was that court orders could not be removed on time because there are so many children now in the system. And subsequently, many of them lapsed because of that. Many now the children were left with no means of support in terms of the foster care grant. Then the Center for Child Care, I'm not going to really go into detail because last year I think the committee was briefed case, but just to say that because of that, then the Center for Child was educated, the department in SASA, and that now led to the North Carolina High Court and believe that there should be some legislative amendments done to address the challenges that you are facing the foster care system. Hence today the chairperson we have this bill before us as a committee, which seeks to address the issues that I think the committee is very familiar with in terms of the child support grant. And the main proposal that's contained in the bill is that of the additional payment, which is being often referred to in the bill as presented here as the child support grant top-up to prescribe categories of children, as I said. So the minister must prescribe which children should benefit from this additional payment. Okay, and just to keep that in mind, that's now where the gist of the submissions are about, that category of children. The top-up chairperson is the additional money that the minister, together with the Minister of Social Development, together with the Minister of Finance, must come up with or must make an announcement on it, and that money will have to be added to the grant. in this case, the charter for a client.
So in other words, over and above the medium term grant that was meant for the previous approach, you come with an additional allocation.
Yes, Secretary.
As a top up means.
Yes. Additional in that sense.
So if you did the value of 100 grand, now it's because 200 grand or 150 something like that.
Yes.
To cater for more people.
To cater for all these two people.
So that top up should be clarified.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Okay, thank you for that clarification, Chairperson, because that would make...
Let me explain why it's important. Why it's important. I'm letting my finger. It's a top-up to each child who's already in the class.
Oh.
That's why it's important to express. You say they use the provision not so much, but who are those big numbers, the number of money left to increase the creator of the union? So that other top-up must be explained.
Yeah, fortunately, it's not like you as well to assist yet.
Yeah. Well, it's important, but when you say top up, it can mean many things. It can mean that there were five children in the class, so they're getting 10 grand each. Top up means they're getting 2 grand each. It can mean. Somebody must when you say top up, don't assume that it's from you.
Okay.
I think she explained it, but then that if you are here,
yeah, just to clarify, the intention is that every child who is an offence will get currently someone who has already been in the normal child support grant system, others might be applying for the foster child grant. The intention of this is to provide an additional amount over and above the child support grant that currently exists. So the child support grant is around 450 now. So based on what the Minister and the Minister of Finance are able to top up, the amount which they are able to top up, this extended child support grant will become maybe 600 or thereabouts. But that amount is for children who are orphans and living with their relatives.
So it's not meant for the normal support grants.
No.
So for those children who are offered, it's higher.
It will be a higher amount. Mm-hmm.
Can you see the important?
So the top grant is there, yes.
Yeah.
So that they don't go into the foster child system.
Okay. So
because they're not in need of care in terms of how a child in need of care is described in the Children's Act.
So in other words, if a child support grant gave 4 months, the normal support grant, you are not talking about the normal child, you are talking about the orphans.
Yeah, for only those children, yes.
It's more than clarified. So what's not what we're talking about? Everything is even clarified more. Thank you very much. I don't want to do anything I don't understand.
But I think the other thing is to note that the regulations will clarify exactly how that's going to work. You still have to do the regulations.
By the time they clarify, you have clarified.
Yes, but it's just to say the details of what
they
are doing.
I want to talk about it.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you. I think it's not part of it. What? Yes, I said something.
I want to ask, how is the possible grant?
I think I made a mistake by opening the camera. Finish the thing. Let me ask that. I called the camera.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Thanks for that. Okay, so the submissions that we received, we have 6 Children's Institute. Research, Center for Child Law, Catholic Parliamentary Liaison Office, Children in Distress Network, and from Ms. Nomuke Wanya. Chairperson, what I did is because most of the submissions, they support each other, they actually talk to the same issue. So I didn't go per institution what they said, I just combined because they are all in support of the proposed amendment, but where it is something that's different than I have put it here, Chairperson. Okay, so when I say they, I think those support the child support card pop up and they have the argument they put forward, which I think was just going to throw if you establish it as just covering as well. So this organization, they support the inception of Prop 4, which is now the provision for the top-up. They add that if child support grant is implemented effectively, it will reduce the administrative burden in unit numbers in the foster care system. It will be easily accessible for quick action because the child support grant doesn't meet all those purposes that it alluded to before. And because of that, it will free up time for social workers to perform prevention and child protection services, which was the concern that was raised last year by the members, as well as freeing some time for the magistrate as well. So basically, like Chris Bender said, the children will now be diverted from the foster care system to go through the child support system, which is quicker to process and is easily accessible. Unlike now that they have to go through the foster care plan, which now has all these other requirements that need to be met. Okay, the other proposal that they put forward is that child support should be for all parents living with relatives, that category, as they are not necessarily in need of care and protection. I'm not going to explain that, just explained it. And mainly they say now, this top-up should not be too low. So my analysis is that if, say, foster care is now set to 1,000 rand, meaning the child support grant plus the top-up should almost be equivalent to foster care grant. So that's why the argument says, imagine it's too low. That's now my analysis. I'm saying to a person, the foster care grant now, so that the submissions are saying this top up shouldn't be too low. Now my analysis and that mean my takeaway is that if a child support grant is now say 400 for 50, then the top up should make it to be almost at the same level as the foster care grant, so that it doesn't be such a problem for these children, these orphans who can now go through the foster care.
It will be a topper. I think the key problem will be topper. Other calculations can be done depending on what factors are taken. But I don't dismiss your point. It could be right.
Yeah.
But I think we should forget ourselves by saying topper. And then the guys will be the number will work depending on what factors are taken.
Okay, I think
when.
But I hear
you.
Okay. That's my reading from what the submissions. I think next week when they come, they will explain further. Okay, that's my analysis of
your school.
Okay. So the recommendation that they put before the committee is that the Children's Act needs to be amended to clarify to social workers and children's courts that only children in need of care and protection are to be put in the foster care system. Orphans living with relatives and not in need of care and protection should be directed to the child support grant top-up system. That's what now the submission is saying. Committee on how this can be addressed. So there is going to be a table here next week.
But there will be some requirement.
There will be regulations.
But
yes.
I can't. You don't have that.
Yes. So your regulations will deal with that. But the Children and Institute will just want to put this before the committee, and they say they have some evidence that they want to present next week on some of the proposals on their side, how this can be addressed. Then when it comes to now removing Chairperson from the top up, because I said I just put them under one as that for submission on the top up. When it comes to definitions, we have a submission from Black Sash with regard to the Independent Tribunal. Let's just propose that reference when we look at the definitions on the bill. It proposes that reference to appointed by the minister. Maybe I should read the definition chapter for the benefit of members. I'll refer you to that definition. If you go to the to the draft bill and you look at section 1B, just the first page of the bill. Okay. Under independent tribunal, see it's in bold, that's the law to the Assembly Act. There, independent tribunal is defined, it means the independent tribunal appointed by the minister as contemplated in section 18.1. Okay, that ends there. Then Blessed says that refers to appointed by the minister. It shouldn't be under definition. It should be deleted. The argument is that that no substantive law should be created in the definition. That issue is dealt with in section 18.2b of the Principal Act. I have the Act of which I
have.
But that's what I should bring.
It's very important. Yeah. This will be meant for us.
Okay, and I'm not going to.
But it is what?
Yeah,
do you know? Yes.
Just thought maybe I should read what the principal
Act
says. Okay. In section 18 of the Act, subsection 2, subsection 3, says the minister may, after considering the appeal and the agency's reason for the decision, he says, appoint an independent tribunal to consider the appeal in accordance with such conditions as the minister may prescribe by notice in the Gazette. And that tribunal may, after consideration of the matter, confirm, vary, or set aside that decision, or make any other decision which is just. So the main thing is that appointed by the minister is already provided in this section. So that's the submission from the section. It can be dealt with when you go in by clause by clause, it's also with any kind of system. Okay, the Heather made a submission under the amendment now in terms of definition of a parent under section 1C, that's below independent tribunal. The section reads, by the insertion after the definition of parent of the following definition, person, for the purpose of social relief of distress in the event of disaster, means the head of the household or anyone within the household acting on his or her behalf or an organization rendering disaster relief service. Now, Blessed says it supports the inclusion of the extending the definition of a person as a person. The next point is on the repeal of the internal reconsideration process. That's the top six of the bill. Let's address the concern that the repeal of the internal reconsideration in clause 6 may create a is not present in the resolution of issues. Chair, I think there will be an opportunity to elaborate on this next. And to refer the committee on that in the submission. Okay. Still on Blackfish, it supports the establishment of the inspectorate. And then it recommends that skills and expertise of the inspectorate should include at least one retired member of the judiciary with suitable experience and expertise in law, and at least one person with experience or expert knowledge of forensic auditing and risk management. On the issue of, something a bit different now, moving to the amendment of the South African Social Security Agency Act, that now the act has established SASA, a different act now this time, but it does now raise the submission, so that's why I decided to add it here. Chairperson Blackfish says, to address the issue of ensuring adequate oversight of a social assistance payment system, Blackfish recommends that the SASA Act, be amended to do the following. Compel SASA and SAPO to submit regular performance reports involving fraud and corruption activities to the inspectorate. Compel SASA and SAPO to ensure that the national social assistance payment system database is not used for commercial gain. That's not a separate act, because it's not the one before us here. I'm almost finishing, Chair. Then we have Umamunongke Banyaza. She, her submission was on definitions, so I took the definitions as they were presented in the hard copy of the submission. She says additional payments should be defined as money from the social development to help the needy. Social funds, an amount of money from government, benefits a certain amount of income to elevate poverty. Then she defines culture as distinctions made between physical aspects created by society. It's also called material culture and everything else which is the intangible, such as language, customs, beliefs, and values that are the main referent of the term culture. Patriarchy as a social system in which the husband is sovereign, possesses power, and exercises control. A child in a household, a child.
What's interesting is that if the wife is also possessing power, so that means the wife is not possessing power. Maybe we should explain that.
Yeah, next time.
Maybe something is missing in that
situation. Okay. So we'll give it the next step. So you explain yourself. Okay, child-headed household, a child or children looking or taking care of other children at home, no parents or have died. Social relief, an amount of money from the government helping the needy people with funds. And that's the end, chicken, of the summary of submission. And that ends my presentation.
Because I want sharp ears. Next week is very case of clarification. Politicians are asking those who are submitting with the police authority. But no
Let's focus on the definition, which other submissions do.
Daniel to us. We have some of the fastest ever. We're writing this book here. For Daniel. Next lecture. Sasha, why are you here? I just want to say, all of us, let us remind ourselves. We were saying, remember Air Portfolio Committee? She had the IFP, EFF consultation. Yeah. Mr. Common Coalition. I just want to say to our members, just to restate this. We said oversight is not a tool of conscience. It never has been about time. It's a tool of effective accountability. And the duty of oversight is to make sure that all the things parliamentarians are supposed to do in oversight, those things are done. All entities must report. Remember what we said about MBA? We said MBA needs to come up. Because if we talk about lifting the vulnerable people, the root of lifting them is self-support, self-defending, looking after themselves. There's nothing destroying people like the increasing numbers of people who are supposed to be looked after. So if you read the book by Jack Welch, Winning, it's one of the robust and the most preserved books I've ever read in management. It speaks about candor and differentiation. It says, in an institution, the useless, you put them at the bottom and tell them like that you belong at the bottom. The best, you put them at the top and tell them at the top, you give them the reward they deserve. The medal you give them, the medal, but they all work for the same thing. And he has demonstrated how that makes General Electric a powerful institution. So you don't say to useless people, say, I think you're all so good. So you are destroying them. I'm not sure what I'm saying. But what I'm trying to say is that a society that is powerful is when all its people are at work. A society that is powerful is the one that has got policies that liberate the capacities of its own people to work. And self-belief, self-confidence is the cornerstone of a successful nation. And when many people are in that vulnerable group, you are increasing the numbers of dependent people who have a low self-confidence. So MBA must work and work and come with innovative ideas of lifting our people there. Because people love putting their friends satisfied. From the whole door. So we're saying entities must be accountable. Must know what is happening. And I want to assume anyway that the issue of AG's intervention report, the consultation account, so that we know TG, what has happened. We don't want to meet AG again to realize that we still do what was charged before. When we go to the AG this time, we must demonstrate to the AG that this was not a parliament. We're not sleeping at work. We must get report on how your intervention and the action plans on the policy of if there's things that are concerned about. But anyway, let's allow Sasha to report. I'm told we are reporting on the quarters.
We're meant to report two quarters, but because we finished December, which is the last quarter, we thought it was important for us to also update the committee on the third quarter. It's fine.
Ideally, members know, 1 month after the end of the quarter, that is when you get this sort of report. But because this one has been kept somewhere, I protect it, not reporting. Now we're aligning. We're doing one work no matter what we're not supposed to do. We're catching up. I say that.
Chairperson, honorable members, thank you very much, SDG and presented the portfolio committee, the SASA's first and second quarter reporting, but we'll also highlight the performance for the third quarter because we've just completed the third quarter. I will then ask Zaki, our CFO, to present on the budget and expenditure in terms of where we are after having presented on the performance against the targets. Just as a way of emphasizing again is that SASA is a Schedule 3A public entity which was established in 2016 and she's distracting. 2006, not 2016, in terms of the Act of Parliament that was done in 2004. Our objective is to be the sole agent that will ensure the efficient and effective management, administration, and payment of the social assistance. The other strategic intent is to eventually serve as an institution to manage the broader social security benefits. In terms of our vision, it's to be the leader in the delivery of social security services, and our mission is to administer social security services to eligible children, older persons, and people with disabilities. I will also talk to what are our key priorities that we set for this period, which is 2014-2019, which is reducing income poverty by providing social assistance to eligible individuals, to improve service delivery, to improve organizational efficiency, and ensure that the institutions, the institutionalization of social grant payments is done through SASA. I will not talk to the objectives that are indicated in the presentation. Just to highlight the key network that we have as an organization is that we have approximately 8,260 staff, and we're talking to the approximate number because every quarter the numbers will actually change. We currently have 6 regional offices and 46 district offices. The regional offices are actually linked to the different provinces that we have. We also do have a mobile trucks that we normally would use when we go to communities to tell communities about the work that we do. We have service points that we have in different local locations and instances where we bring services closer to our people. We have a national call center, but over and above that, we have call centers that also exist to all the different provincial offices, over and above the fact that clients or beneficiaries can also walk through to all our different offices. Our current administration budget, which is our operating budget, is 7.6 billion rand, with the bulk of it, with a portion of it, which is about 1.2 billion being for cost of employees that the CFO will talk to. Our customers are basically older persons, people with disabilities, and children. Approximately 2% of our population benefits in different areas that we serve. Our current social assistance transfers, which would normally come from DSD, is 175 billion range. We are currently sitting at about 140 billion in terms of what we've already spent. We have an extensive footprint, which I explained earlier on, and that's our footprint that is what I referred to in terms of the fact sheet. The structure of our programs is two-phased, with the most important being the benefit administration and support, which is what we actually deliver. The administration is what it is that we do to ensure that we deliver on the program that we actually run, which is the benefits administration and support. Chairperson, I'm aware that the focus should be on outcomes, but we just thought it was important for us to highlight have achieved in quarter one, two, and three. Quarter one, we've done a better compared to where we needed to be, which is the average that we set, which was supposed to be at 74%. So I will not focus on that, I'll focus on the outcomes. The benefits, admin, and support area in terms of what it is that you've achieved over the past 9 months. The one key area of focus was for us to make sure that we roll out the biometric enrollment of biometrics, which would be for both our staff, starting with our staff, and over time ensuring that we also do that for the beneficiaries. This is one area that would help us deal with, ensure that we protect our staff as they engage with our system, but also make sure that we pay the right grant to the right person all the time. We've had, we initially started by having a challenge with regards to waiver, whereby they were challenging us driving that process. We're beginning to have meeting of minds. We're not quite there yet, but we're beginning to have meeting of minds. And we found that we also have a slight challenge with the capacity in terms of the system, but we're looking at alternatives in terms of what it is that we need to do to make sure that the system is also able to roll out the biometrics, because as we are rolling out more and more branches, what we're finding is that the capacity of the system needs to also be improved at the same time, because once we use biometrics, it means the capacity must be much, much more. The ICROP, which is the system that we use to actually engage our communities, what we had intended to do was for us to review as to whether we're able to reach a community at the best way we know how. Initially, we had intended to actually get support from an external support for us to review this. We then decided that between us and DSD, we can do the initial review, and over time, we can then get people from academic institutions so that we can make sure that we're doing the right thing. So that is also on track in terms of our side, and we're hoping that we'll be able to complete that process, at least of doing the initial review on our side before the end of the year. And we thought at the initial period, which is now, that it wasn't critical for us to go out and get external support, because we believe we can achieve the minimum requirements on our side. On the finance side, the social assistance debt recovery is instances whereby people that should not be in the system come into the system, and when we find challenges, we then have to go and do collections from those people that should not be in the system that are in the system. So we do the debt collection, which is a process whereby in instances where we find that we cannot do the collection, would then engage National Treasury for support. Financial misconduct cases, we have a process whereby we have a team that looks at all these financial misconduct cases so that we can make sure that we begin to manage consequences. And in terms of where we currently are, we have submitted a number of cases to National Treasury for condemnation, and we're waiting for National Treasury to come back to us on some of them so that we can make sure that we finalize the whole backlog. What we're finding is that we're not adding too many other cases on top of the ones that we had previously, because we're beginning to manage this more effectively. Chair, the other area which we're beginning to fall behind on is on the corporate services side, particularly in terms of the review of the organizational structure. This is not because of a lack of intent to make sure that we manage this. It's more because we've put a different process in terms of what it is that we need to do to review the structure of the organization, that it should not only be driven by the biometric program, but also in terms of the strategy that we need to be driving going forward as an organization. And labor and all the other stakeholders. On the ICT side, Chair and members of the portfolio committee, we have improved extensively in terms of the network because our systems were slow, especially in areas where we're looking at the last mile, and we're beginning to improve in those areas for the support of the suppliers that have been providing us the last mile and making sure that all of our branches are able to deliver what they need to deliver. So we've achieved 89% of the improvement of the network in all the areas which we had targeted. On the internal audit side, which is and risk management, it's important to highlight to the committee that we in the past didn't have a risk management committee, which is a committee that we put in place recently to make sure that we can get people that can also provide additional support to us as a team, that we don't only look at strategic risks but also operational risks. On the internal audit reviews, we always set targets in terms of the things that we need to do to ensure that we constantly review our operations, and the target that was set by internal audit to do the reviews, they had set a target of 16 reviews that needed to be done, and we've already done 12. Chair, I will now focus on the outcomes in terms of the areas of focus. The outcome of the key outcome that we have is to reduce income poverty by providing social assistance to eligible beneficiaries. Chair, it's important to highlight the grant as a percentage of the total population in each of the different provinces, which is what we look at. And what's key to highlight is that in the Eastern Cape and in the Limpopo and in Northern Cape, the numbers are quite high, where the numbers are over 40% in relation to the population in those areas that we actually provide support. The different programs that we look at is the care dependency, child support, foster care, the disability grant, and the grant in aged and old age, and the war veterans. What's important to note is that the war veterans, because we're looking at the war veterans of prior wars, the numbers are beginning to reduce extensively in terms of those, which is quite interesting. The other thing that is important.
Sorry. What is the indication of poverty reduction here? Is it the number of people who are in the system? Can you be clarified?
No, Chair. In terms of here I'm highlighting the number of people that we serve.
I don't know, I'm asking this question in the world. Something called outcome. I'm not sure you're elaborating on that.
The responsibility we have, Chair, is to make sure that we provide support to those people that need poverty to be alleviated. So what I'm highlighting the numbers is to say what are the number of people that we're providing this support, which is the outcome being to make sure that we alleviate poverty in those people that currently cannot take care of themselves. That's what I'm highlighting, Chair. Okay. Chair, I think in terms of the focus here is the social grants to eligible people, as I indicated before. So we've highlighted the numbers that we have increased over the different areas between the targets that we had in the first quarter, the second quarter achievement, and the third quarter in terms of what it is that we've delivered. In terms of the number of people that we currently serve, it's 17.3 million in terms where we moved from the second quarter, and in the third quarter we were serving 18.1 million beneficiaries in all the different categories that we look at. is for us to ensure that we provide a relief in distress, which in many instances, Chair and Portfolio Committee members would be in instances where there's disasters, but also in instances where we find that there's people that need urgent support for poverty alleviation. The budget that we have as a transfer from social development is 110 million, and the target in terms of the number of people that we intended to the status in terms of where we were, the number of people we provided support for in June last year was actually sitting at 129,000 people. This we do check in a number of ways. In some instances, we provide cash, and we also provide food parcels and school uniforms for children that may be going to school without any kind of support. And in some instances, we provide vouchers. And the expenditure in the first quarter was actually sitting at 165 million, with us in the last quarter achieving 407 million. As I indicated, Chair, that the allocation that we had from DSD was 410 million, which therefore means that we slightly increased in terms of the allocation that we had. And this is as a result of the number of disasters that we're beginning to have as a country, because the more disasters we have, the more support we actually have to provide, which therefore means that as a collective we also need to begin to look at what it is that we need to do to support areas where we have consistent disasters, because otherwise it becomes quite a bit of a challenge for us to be able to achieve it becomes costly for us to go in instances where people have had fires or we have water disasters. So it has to be an integrated process that we look at as a country, not just for us as social development. The other key program that we implement is the reduction of exclusion errors for children below 1 year old. As indicated, in the past we were reaching less and less children under one, and with an improved focus in terms of making sure that we reach those children, we're now sitting at 63% in terms of being able to reach the children under one. In 2014, the percentage that we're achieving was actually only 39%. So we want to believe that the more we have an integrated approach in terms of ensuring that we catch those children at earlier stages, we can then be able not to have that challenge. And we're looking at how we can work better with health facilities so that we can catch those children earlier. In terms of continuing with the issue of reduction, we earlier on spoke about the issue of how we need to ensure that we improve the capacity that we have in terms of processing the orders, which is a challenge that we've been working on together with social development. What we are currently sitting, where we're currently sitting, is the total cumulative number of foster care orders that we've received, which are currently sitting at 82,657. With the extension being received, it therefore means that we'll be able to catch all those children that school court orders may actually have lapsed. So the other area to focus on is that the highlights that we always continue to look at reviews to make sure that we improve on the errors. And this we work in all the different areas to make sure that the people that should not be part of the system, we do the reviews, and in areas where people need to be out of the system, that we are able to do that. So these are the numbers in terms of what we've done in the different months. The other key area that we focus on is ensuring that we provide better support, we improve in focusing on is making sure that in terms of processing of the grants, we deliver really quicker and we make sure that we don't make the clients or the beneficiaries work wait for too long in terms of that process. And the key target that we have there is that we need to make sure that the processing of new application, we're able to process the people that come through to our offices, but also to improve in terms of the turnaround time of the processing of the application. This relates to the efficiency in terms of us making sure that we deliver value. So those are the targets that we've had, and we're able to achieve 90% in terms of the first quarter, and again in the third quarter, we're able to achieve 99.16% in terms of the people that had actually come through that whose applications we had to process. The other key area, Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee, is making sure that we take service delivery, which we spoke to earlier on, which is the ICROP program. We take service delivery to the different communities, particularly where service does not actually exist. And we in the beginning of the year, identified a number of wards that we need to go to, and we had identified 354 wards that we needed to go to, and we had already achieved by end of December 357 wards in terms of the targeted communities that we needed to go to. The other key area in terms of service to beneficiaries is the outcome being to make sure that we institutionalize social grant payment process. And this is in line with the commitment to make sure that this area is driven more from the SASA side as compared to the process that we used to use before. In January 2020, the payment cycle, which is the recent payment cycle, we paid 18.1 million social grants to different categories of beneficiaries that we actually paid. These grants, as indicated in the past, Chair, is that what we normally would do, we would pay directly to the social grant to the client, which on the first day of the month, the money would be in the card of the client. And it's important to indicate that in terms of the total number of grants that we pay, 70% of the grants are paid to people who hold the cards with the post office, while 30% of the people actually hold in their cards with different banks. Our clients now have a choice whereby they can decide to go to a bank of their choice. They have a bank that they work with, and were able to deposit the funds directly to that bank with some of the clients, obviously 70% currently sitting with the post office. So the detail basically is more on the different banks that have been chosen chosen by the clients in terms of where they want their funds to go to. So those are the numbers which we continue to track on a continuous basis. Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee, the other key area in relation to social assistance payments is to, which I highlighted, was to make sure that we insource the grant payment system, and we provide the payment of social grants in terms of the processes that we currently do. We are responsible for the control of these payments, as I indicated earlier on, and I've highlighted that some we pay through their bank and other clients we pay through SAPO, which is the majority. As we may be aware, is that the provision of payment through SAPO, which is more the distribution side of the payment, has been with SAPO for almost 1.5 years now, and we've had a number of challenges that we've been working on, and we continue to have a process whereby we have continuous meetings between the two ministers And the team, which is the SAPO team and ourselves, together with the DGs from both areas, to make sure that we continue to improve on the provision of those payments with emphasis to those clients that are paid through SAPO. The challenges that we've had over the past year include the ISPS system, which is the grant system that SAPO implemented to provide support to our clients. So in some payment days, we've had a number of challenges where we found that the system has been unstable. In most of the months, in recent months, we've seen improvement because we now have a project plan together with SAPO and Postbank to ensure that there's improvement, particularly with emphasis on the network connectivity. The other challenge that we've had is the auto-reversal, whereby clients would go to an ATM to get their payment, and the payment would be rejected. So we've been working together with them on a project plan to make sure that those challenges are actually resolved, and we have monthly meetings with the ministers, and they constantly report on what are the things that they are implementing. And there's beginning to be more improvement, Chair, because of the focus and the team effort that we've been using in terms of managing those. The one area that continues to be a challenge is the cable theft that happens in different post offices. Just to highlight, Chair, in terms of the number of clients that we actually pay, 500,000 clients would normally go to the actual post office of the 80 million clients grants that we pay. So 500,000 would go to the post office to actually get support, and about 200,000 clients would go to a pay point. And that's where the pressures continue, which is an area that we continue to put focus because we think that's where we need to make sure that improvements happen. So those are the key areas. So the cash pay points in terms of the numbers, we have 1,740 cash pay points where we continue to pay through the PayPal post office together with their support in terms of the cash institutions that support them. And in relation to that, we constantly look at whether we're paying at the right pay point, and we engage together with the provinces as to whether in instances where we need to move those, we actually move them. We've had a number of challenges in terms of instances where SAPO branches, because they are the ones that are beginning to be highly impacted upon, whereby robberies actually happen, and we find that because they are SAPO is becoming a target, and that does impact on the client in terms of them being able to access their money. But we constantly are reviewing that, Chair, also to make sure that there's improvement, and that each time the day of payment happens, that SAPO has got sufficient security to be able to do that. The other key area, Chair, is to ensure that we manage the issue of fraud and corruption, both in our environment and also in instances where we work the fraud may be happening in the SAPO environment. The key was for us to make sure that 70% of reported cases are dealt with as quickly as we can. Yes, we know that it doesn't matter how many people are affected, we need to make sure that we deal with the turnaround time. There's been huge improvements, Chair, in relation to that, where we find that of the 132 cases, many of the cases have been finalized, because we not only do we have to ensure that the client that the situation has been made good in relation to the client, but it's also to make sure that we resolve the cases together with the law enforcement agencies. So there's been huge improvement, Chair, but we need to make sure that the turnaround time is as quickly as we possibly can. The improved consequence management, Chair, is one of the other areas that we've been putting focus on to make sure that in instances, which is one of the areas make sure that we improve together with the team that is responsible for us making sure that where things have gone wrong, we actually institute disciplinary processes to make sure that people know what it is that they need to do. And in instances where we need to focus on training, we do so, but in instances where people have actually done things wrong, that we manage that and get the wrongdoings out of the system. So those are all the different areas that we focus on in the different quarters. Some people would get verbal warnings and team warnings, and in many instances we would end up having to dismiss people where we realize that people did things that they shouldn't have done. So that has been the focus in the different quarters, Chair. I'm not talking to the numbers, but we can discuss the detail. The other objective is, as part of the process of upholding good governance, Chair, is to making sure that the financial misconduct cases, and these would be broad cases. In some instances, it would be instances where people may have taken assets of the organization, and we need to make sure that we deal with those cases. But this is this would relate to damages and losses on some of the assets of the organization, but also looking at the issues that relate to fruitless and wasteful expenditure to make sure that we manage those. And we're beginning to have less and less of these because we put key structures to ensure that we're able to manage these. The effective financial management, Chair, and members of the portfolio committee relate to making sure that we improve on our financial management. And this is making sure that on the debt side, which I spoke to earlier on, that we do the collection of which the number currently is sitting at over a billion range, but we constantly are managing to make sure that we improve on this particular aspect. 100% of the eligible suppliers in relation to the people that provide support to the organization is for us to make sure that we actually pay them within 30 days. We've been putting a lot of focus on that, particularly with SMMEs, that we need to make sure that we don't a negative impact on the work that they do and the service that they provide to the organization. I will end there, Chair, and hand over to our CFO, not unless the Chair wants us to take the questions on this part.
The problem, I usually sit down very carefully. I still think, CEO, we need to change our form of presentation. See, I'm convinced that the company doesn't want everything to change. But we'll be able to have an access. There must be principal reasons why we are changing. And they must be identified. Whether people talk about upholding good governance, there must have been a reason why we need that. It could be 5 or 4 reasons. What the company is interested in, my view, is that those reasons at what level today. But so we don't want to sit here and listen what Aliba and leaves and whatever. And so on, whatever. But as an attachment for us, it's useful for the community. But for the purpose of presentation, it's important to say these are the critical reasons why government is important. And we think they are improving, that they were at this level and at this level. And then remember, they say, what did you do? Then you can go to the teacher. I think we need to think carefully about how we do this presentation, so that you do a narrative which is placed on key issues that the members will remember.
The portfolio committee is curious about the results that are affecting the lives of communities. We're interested where those results are. But if you want to know why this is not, then you can go to the kitchen. I'm saying, I don't want to claim to declare on how it should be done, because you guys are better trained. It's very, very good. But I was just still noticing when I said to you, let's go to what you're speaking about, the government outcome. What page is that? When I said, anyway, boy. Well, today I see the government. Resilient. Against change. Huh? Page 15. Resilient against change. Page 15, huh? Yes, the government. Read that thing. What does it say? Reduce income poverty. But let's go the point I'm trying to make is that reduce can't be a result of the attitude. But outcome is supposed to be enough.
Chair, I want to...
I'm saying that an outcome is supposed to be a result. It's a particular level of it. The summer when you speak about objectives, what page is that? Let's go to 19. Reduction of the students. Again, reduction is not a mistake. But let's go, I'm just being difficult this year because I think let's work together carefully. Let's go to a big dictionary meaning of an objective. Let me read it for you. Well, sometimes people think these things are coming from that, from me. I don't have the capacity to define it. I cannot produce them because I'm an ordinary chap from India. But let me read it for you. Objective. A specific result that a testing or system aims to achieve. Specific results within time frame and available resources. What I'm trying to make an objective is a state that you want to realize. It's not an action that you want to realize. And I thought we discussed last year, so let's change. It's a state that you want to realize. What an action plan. It means you must describe a state, not an action. Reduction is an action. Reducing is an action, it's an activity. And we've modernized this thing to improve language. So that we can talk a common thing. Right? And there's nothing extraordinary we need to do. You think, I know, officials think that this is a minor difference. Reducing and reduced is not the same thing. Mm. Are we there? Mm. Reducing and reduced, it's not the same thing. When you commit to reduce, we want to know by how much at what given point in time. How do we say reducing? You can't be reducing, it doesn't matter what you're reducing. The scientific language is a little bit different. I keep on giving it, boring example. When I Father, may I want the record of your name and information? It might have been in the past, the Holy Record of the time. But let me say this. One official says, we will build 5 structures this year. 5 structures. I do remember. We'll build 5 structures. He said, what does that mean? I said, excuse me. What does that mean? If we find you at the end of the year on a foundation of instruction, you've achieved your, if we accept that as a goal, if we find you maybe delivering bricks to the area of or collecting cement, you're in a process of building. It doesn't tell us anything. But if you say 5 structures completed this year, then you are talking. Because we want to know. Let me tell you what this is for. If you say 5 structures completed this year, when we meet you at the first quarter, we want to check you what the amount of cost towards completing 5 structures. What is that? Build. That's not a result. An activity or an action and so on. And I'm saying, we can't be this year discussing the same thing. Please, guys, it's changed. That's not, let me bring the vision up now. Because maybe people think that I've got crazy ideas. Modern, we are strict about results-based management. Because we want to measure. And quarterly, we want to check whether you're in course. I know some of you call it performance indicators. I'm a teacher of that. I'm a teacher of that. But all these that are written here, listen, we know what you're saying. But it can't depend on us knowing what you're saying. It must depend on whether you have written correctly what you are saying. Because when these things go to court, the most logical discipline, I'm very careful about this. Let me say, among the most logical discipline, I think law is one. But when a person says, if I say, I want to see how important this thing is, I have people in your managers who are working under you. If a manager say reduction of excuses of errors, in your head you know what you mean. And you say your junior did not perform. And they will demonstrate that they did reduce. Doesn't matter how much. Maybe by a percentage, by a fraction of the business, you can't fire that person. Because that's what they have accepted. And now I'm trying to be a judge now. Because it must be concrete. This is called the language of concreteness. Those who don't like Marx must forgive me. You see, we believe in Marxist analysis in the organization of Marx, but not in Marx. But executing pragmatically, but from Marxist analysis is a very honest analysis. So you can decide what you want to do with it. If you decide to be a liberal or a capitalist, but please just be honest in analysis. All I'm saying, I want to hammer this thing. The reason I'm difficult to teach you about this, or you may call someone, to go ahead. We want to talk effectively to one another. Usefully defend them. I think, have I said this one? Is it clear? If I don't make sense, you guys can tell. So let's correct it. We are starting to hear and deliver. We want this department to lead in proper appraisal. It must be that it's capable of doing that, but the minister was open-minded on those issues. You cannot blame that one, because I know. In one of the meetings where she was presented, in the party forum, she presented that. Meaning that she heard what the committee said. But me, then it's more. Okay. So my warning now is that when you go to finance, I know what's going to happen. The whole region should have died. Something all of us can do with you. I'm just being constructively critical. The entire last of us. And then the whole region should have been here and then say, what's the use of giving to the financial? Because you can simply reduce. We want a narrative that is contained in those things. What story do you want to carry out of those things? Can we change?
Yeah,
the presentations have been, let me tell you, they are far better than what they used to be. Mm-hmm. Let me worry with you. Must be very careful. I think they're misconceiving the wrong message. But they must get where we want them to be. What I promise? I'm discouraging reading these figures. Unless the CFO is for another issue, she can. But if it's just reading those numbers that are there, I don't want to stay for something that I can do without. Because if people make those figures, then I can ask what I'm asking them. Am I being fair? No. I'm trying to introduce efficiency in the manner we do things. What are those? Is this how many quarters? First? Second? Third. Done. No, it's yours. I know I monopolize it. When I'm sick here, when I'm writing up, when I'm going, you know?
Yeah.
My apology. I forgot that you are a member of Parliament. We were chasing you away. My apology. You know, I like the idea of that. I wanted to have a conversation with you on how bad you're doing.
Thank you, Jefferson. Just to say that we were still.
Oh, I feel good.
I just want to say thank you very much for the presentation. Really, it is helpful to see what you have done, and I know what Jefferson is echoing in terms of what we have believed. But thank you for what you've given. I need to leave, unfortunately, for another meeting, so I apologize. I just wanted to highlight something. I saw that on the industrial action that was taken against people that have been caught in actions of misconduct, that the sanctions doesn't equal the amount of cases that are in the slide. Now, I don't know if I'm missing something. So the question really is that what are we to make of that? When you, as part of industrial action, IR processes against staff, there's outcomes, I'll tell you on which slide it was. I think it's slide 34. Mm-hmm. Yes. Slide 34, yes. I'll just go here quickly to you. So I don't know if I'm missing something. You could clarify in the answer, because I'm looking at the same thing. I'll use that as an example. 422 labor relations cases received, 257 finalized. Final written warnings, 33. Written warnings, 99. Dismissals, 15. Suspension without pay, 15. I don't know if it is just you could explain in the answer. I just wanted to understand in the different columns whether the sanctions that are being reported on, it doesn't equate to the cases. Are the rest of the cases people were innocent? And, you know, so if you could just explain that. Thank you.
Chair, should I take all the questions first before
questions or should we?
Let's proceed. Let's have all the questions.
Yeah, just in finality, I know we brought it up previously with SATA in terms of the number of cases that are being referred to SAT. And again, I think it will come out from the rest of my colleagues again in terms of how many of those cases, why is it that so few of the cases are landing up with SAT? And there's a lot of monies that are being asked for to be written off. Is there a strategy in which SATA is trying to get money back? Because I'm concerned about the amount of money that we are writing off or requesting from Treasury, and at the same time we are trying to increase the number of vulnerable children under 1 year old to process them, get them into the system. I mean, the money, we've got only so much, and we are wanting things to be lifted off, and we need to get our money somehow back, and we're not referring cases, or we're referring very few cases to SAT. That's a major concern for me, and I'm sure the rest of my colleagues are going to elaborate on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My first is to thank Mr. for the presentation. I agree fully with you, Chairperson. It would be nice to have this, but also with another field that we really understand, because some of us are not numbered people, so we struggle a bit to get to what you are trying to tell us, and sometimes we will misunderstand you. First comment that I'd like to make is that I am just looking forward to a time where we will be working towards a 100% performance and the 14 years old that SASA has been established. It will look very good one day to see that we are on 100% performance. But then moving forward, there is a question on slide 21 that I need to find out on those social grants, the reviews. I see with the suspended the benefits that are suspended due to failure to review. Now, I need to understand the process of reviewing. Obviously, are you reviewing every beneficiary? And how are you doing the process? Because I'll tell you why, in January, I had a lot of calls from people at the Kailich saying we went there, we tried to get money, we couldn't. And when I followed it up, it was an issue of review. And when I went back to them, they said, but kind of money, they left or anything. And when I checked on that, it was the PO box addresses and all of that. So is there a better way, maybe involve media, radio, whatever, to make sure that people know? Because some of them didn't even know about something like review. They thought because they have the benefits, they will get them until they die. So it was just a shock for them, but there's a process that you have to go be reviewed, and for those about to die, you have to go and check whether or not and all those things. So I just want to know, because I see the number is high, it's almost 50 on those who have failed. So how have you dealt with it? Are we still on the 30,000? Have you tried to get those people to make sure, but at the end, what is happening, and how from now on are you going to communicate this issue of reviewing? And on the fraud issue, the page 34 issue, before I go on to the fraud issue, where my colleague who was not a book today, I was going to ask a question as well on page 34. I see my concern is that I believe that when we have disciplinary hearing, it's not mainly for punitive results. We are trying to rehabilitate people and put them on the right track. I am concerned about the number of dismissals that you have, you know? So I just need to know, were they irreconcilable cases that you felt that these people cannot be rehabilitated? Because actually, in the last quarter, it went very high. So I just want to find out, but do you as SASSA have some rehabilitation program whereby you don't just dismiss, but you try and correct those people before you get to the point of dismissing them? And then I know that there's a fraud unit in SASSA, and I think the manager was just appointed a few months ago, or last year, something like that, I'm not sure. But is there a way that maybe you could have a report directly from the fraud unit, you know, that he will be able to present to us and tell us on the progress of the fraud cases that they are dealing with, especially in internal cases of pertaining to fraud, and how far is that going? And go to check.
That's for Brian.
Thank you, Chairperson. I hope I'm not out of order, but there are just a few things that are issuing me. In terms of our general performance, I see we seem to be decreasing from 7% to 8% in the first quarter to 73%. And I know some, I held from the freezer, and I know sometimes you have annual problems, and that is the reason for the variation. But maybe is there a specific reason for the decrease in that? And Chairperson, I have to agree with you. I'm also used to a very macro presentation. And I would love to know from the department whether or how closely are our targets as in this presentation aligned to our ACP. Because I see a tendency within our provincial department that we are not necessarily aligned. So we have targets that do not speak to our ACP. You can just speak to that. And in terms of our audit action plan, that you have spoken about our on page 34, our action plans and how we're actually doing management and our fraud cases and things. I've lost my English words today. In terms of our audit action plan and how to better improve our audit so that the AGSA can have better findings or no findings whatsoever, how are we performing in terms of that, seeing as we only have one quarter left? If you can maybe speak to that. And on the one thing that my colleague here in front of me has reached on, and I've actually contacted the minister as well, in terms of the review of SASSA cases and the people experiencing and receiving grants, maybe is there a way to better communicate? Because I've also had a case where some people have received letters twice already asking to confirm banking details or that there are no review process, and some people have not received at all. And I find that is quite unsettling, particularly people receive old age pensions. They get quite worried, and they get verbaliseerd, is the Afrikaans word. And then maybe just as a pure newcomer to this committee, on page 18, we talk about the SRG awards. In terms of cash and food parcels and school uniforms to children who do not receive other benefits, how are those children identified? Do they apply? Does SASSA or the department, how do they actually, and what are those measures that you're doing there? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Book. We need to talk. Hey, there's very much in this time.
Well, thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. Let me also join my colleagues by welcoming the presentation from the department. I think it's quite comprehensive, and we really need to appreciate it. Apart from the issues that we are continuously raising, and some of those issues were expressed by Chairperson earlier on in terms of the manner in which we need to start to improve our reporting systems from the federal level. But I think it's a work in progress.
is also inspired by the quotation of the SASA spokesperson during over the weekend, I believe, or earlier this week, where the spokesperson was quoted as having said that the almost 11 million beneficiaries received their money through straight into their bank accounts from BankServe. And so my question then is that if the bulk of the beneficiaries are paid directly from BankServe and only a smaller amount used especially the cash pay points, do we then, what is the role of SACCO in this whole thing? What is SACCO doing? If the money comes out of, there was a chain, some kind of picture that was painted to us to say what happens from the time the money leaves the treasury to Department, to SASA and all those things. And at the time, I believe that there was an error that led to SACCO. So if you are saying that the money comes out straight, goes straight out of BankServe straight to the bank accounts of the beneficiaries, what is the role of SACCO? Do we need SACCO at all? Because if we don't, it's a question because we need to get into the institutionalization of the grant payment system according to SASA Act. So I'm excited because that it might mean that we are closer to applying the SASA Act and institutionalizing the grant payment system in this country. So that is my question. I just wanted to be guided as to whether or not what I'm interpreting from the slide and what the spokesperson said is true. And on slide 12, I wanted to know about this, and I think this question has been asked in another way by a colleague, but I wanted to know what is the percentage so far of the beneficiaries biometric enrollment, because I was also very excited to hear that there is a meeting of minds and I'm going to benefit from the answer of what that means. But I would like to know, my question was, what is the percentage that has been enrolled this far? And then on page, on slide 19, I'm appreciating the fact that we are actually, SASA is reaching, is increasing the number of age not to 1 year in reaching the children with the grant. I would like to know what is it that SASA practically does for that to happen. Is it just a communication and then people come to SASA, or SASA has got an outreach program that they are conducting to actually make sure that this very important thing is being done? Because it's encouraging, because in my mind it works to combat the issue of stunting that is an issue in South Africa. And the last thing, Chair, speak to slide 21, that this review thing, my question comes from a number of complaints or queries that SASA has helped with, where people are saying that SASA doctors don't do anything. They just look at them and say, you're fine, go home, and you don't qualify. And this has happened even...
Well, sometimes they look at you and say you qualify.
Exactly. Precisely, when you don't. But this has happened, the reason why I'm making it an issue is because this has happened to a young girl whose eyesight is deteriorating so badly. And a private doctor had worked on this issue, and then when they got to SASSA, because they have to go through SASSA doctors, the SASSA doctors just took one look. They say that they were in the SASSA doctor's room for less than 5 minutes or less than 3 minutes, and they were told, you are fine, this is why you have to go home. So I would like to know, because there was a time when some work was done by SASSA where they were, I believe they were reviewing their list of doctors, or that something was being done with these doctors. But I would like to know how far that has gone. That would be all, Chair, for now.
Maybe the point is that we can say they that allegation to say to the investigator, and then later when you deny the truth. Remember that time? Oh, my apologies. First point. Remember?
Yes. Thank you, Chase. Just adding on to our other members, I'd just like to find out of the 51 cases that refer to law enforcement, how many commissions have they been on officials? Are they fines being made, jail time? And also of them, how many are junior and how many are senior officials in this breakdown of dismissal the cases being referred to law enforcement? Then touching on slide 19 and the 0 to 3 year old children, where do you get that initial figure from? Are you taking it from birth rate versus household income? Because one could argue that people actually have less children, and that's why you need to make people. So where are you getting that part of your problem? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
What I meant to do, Chair, is because the first people will be able to.
Thank you very much. Your estimation.
I think we should be able to respond to the question.
Come on.
I'm going to ask our corporate services if we're able to respond to the issues related to labor cases. But just to highlight that in many instances when you refer issues to law enforcement agents, it tends to take time because of the issue of the process of investigation. But we can provide the detail in terms of how many were senior people or and how many were lower level people. But we don't say because you're senior, we don't hand it over to the law enforcement agents. If the things that have been done, it therefore means that we refer all the cases to the enforcement agents. As earlier indicated in the past, I think in the next presentation what we'll do is we'll deal particularly with fraud investigations as requested by the House, and we'll get the current acting GM to come and respond to all those. And we have quite a number of huge cases that are happening, particularly in Eastern Cape, Gauteng, and Cape that Annie will be able to highlight as to where we are. But I'll ask Cesar to highlight the investigations and also Tandi to talk to the issues that are related to labor. I'll ask Diane to respond to the review in terms of what the process is that is being followed. But I must also highlight that we are beginning to look at how can we communicate to clients better than just using the letter, because we know that sometimes we do have challenges with letters not getting to people. So, and for us to refine the contact numbers of cell phones so that we can reach people using the cell phone over and above what is gazetted by law, because the law says we need to actually send a registered letter, but I think we need to go beyond that so that we can make sure that we do reach those clients. Diane will respond to the reviews, but also to the issue that is related to the issue of doctors in terms of what process is being used for us to look at the doctors. And the SRP, social
Thank you. Good morning, Esteem Chairperson and honourable member. I'm going to speak to the issues relating to labour relations cases. The honourable member wanted to check why do the numbers not reconcile, the number of cases as well as the number finalised. This is a very complex process, the labour relations process. It is unlikely that you can receive a particular number within a quarter and finalise all of those because there's a number of dependencies. The finalization of the cases depend on the complexity of the matter, because some investigations take longer than others, depending on how complex the matter is. Then you get into the labor relations disciplinary process itself, and you find that officials continuously ask for postponement, or their representatives are not available to attend. So that impacts the finalization of the cases. So in most cases, then you find that the case is reported in one quarter, but only finalized in the third quarter. And that's why then there's always disparity between the number of receipts and the number of finalists. And Honourable Member Nguyen has concern about the dismissal and whether we're doing something. As we take legal relations to be a progressive process, it's supposed to be progressive, and we do everything within our power to make sure that we don't dismiss people. However, most of the people who find themselves dismissed are the people who commit fraud. And in most cases, you find that it's not a first-time offender. They've committed fraud previously, and then you give them probably a warning, or a final written warning, and then they come back again to defraud you. So those are the people. But for the rest of the people, we try as much as possible. Then you can see the number of final written warnings is actually higher than all the other sanctions, because we try to correct the behavior. It's a pity that we do not record those who have been taken through training as a means of correcting the behavior, because we also do that. But it becomes difficult sometimes to catch all the numbers because it happens everywhere in the country.
Thank you, Chair. I'll talk to the grant issues, the first one being on the review. There is a legislative review process which says we have to notify people through registered mail, and unfortunately that's not a choice. However, as CEO says, we know that people either don't update us when they change their address, or they don't go and collect registered letters because they associate registered letters with bad news, a debt that's not been paid or something like that. So we do have proof of those letters having been sent out. What we can't confirm is whether the people actually collected their letters, and that is a concern. Currently, our legislation requires us to review your grant.
Can you repeat that one just now?
That we have
proof. You've got proof that letters?
We can confirm that we have proof through the registered mail tracking numbers that the letters were sent to the last known address that we have on our system. What we can't confirm is that somebody collected. Okay. Our legislation requires us to review a grant. Now, a permanent disability grant gets reviewed if in the recommendation for the grant or from the medical assessment, the doctor says that there's a likelihood or a possibility that the condition can change. And then the doctor would recommend a review after 5 years or 2 years or 3 years, whatever it is, and that informs the review. The other, it says that we can review a grant when there is a possibility that these circumstances could have changed. Now, people who declare income when they do an application, we should be getting to a position where we're able to review those annually, because if they're getting a private pension or interest on investments and so on, the possibility is that it changes annually. However, we're not at that position yet. So currently, we target reviews in a high-risk category. So we target either exceptions that have been identified through the audit reports, and we bring those people into review to be able to update their information, or people who declared income that at the time was right near the threshold limit, just to make sure that they still qualify. So even with a permanent disability grant, does not mean it's a disability grant for life. And an old age pension, they would get it, but it is subject to review if circumstances would change, and that is why...
You say a permanent disability.
Yes.
It doesn't mean
permanent for life. Yeah. The permanent in terms of our
Yeah. And permanent disability grant, as defined in the Social Assistance Act, just means a disability that continues for a period of longer than 12 months.
Oh.
It doesn't mean a forever. Absolutely.
Okay.
And that's why we can call it in to be even a permanent disability. It's different to the temporary, which is less than 12 months. Right. So that is how we identify the reviews currently. We are working to progressively institutionalize the reviews so that we are doing them every year as required in terms of the policy and not just highlighting the risk areas. Around the social relief and the question there was how do we identify the children specifically for the school uniforms, we would respond to people who come to us, but I need to put a disclaimer right up front. We do not have sufficient social relief funding. We'll see in the slide in terms of how much we've already spent. We don't have sufficient social relief and distress funds, the SRF fund, to be able to assist every poor child with the uniform. So we really try and target your no-fee schools in the very poor areas, and we work with the principals of those schools. We will also accept referrals from NGOs, and then where there is a disaster in a community, for example, a fire, and everything is destroyed, we would then go in and where children have lost their school uniforms, we try and assist, provided that we do have funds. So it's very clearly set out within our policy on how we can identify the children, keeping in mind that social relief, unlike the other grants, says that we can only provide it if we have funds. The other grant, it says, you will provide it and government makes a plan and make sure that there is money. So that is how we try and target the children. Then just on the last question around the medical assessments and the doctors, we do have a set program of training the doctors that we contract or that we use for assessment, for them not to be trained in medical issues, but for them to be trained in the requirements of the Social Assistance Act, so that they know how to assess people for purposes of disability grants and care dependency grants, which is the other one that requires a medical assessment. All that we can say is if there are specific areas or specific doctors that, like this allegation, it says the doctor does not even see, does not examine the person, does not look at the referral report, we would ask that those be reported so that we can follow them up. When the doctor is contracted with us, they sign a contract, and we expect there's a certain amount of time that they're given for each assessment, and those things are monitored. So if they're not doing what they're supposed to, then we really do need to know so that we're able to go and investigate and either retrain or terminate those contracts. And also to stress what is really, really important, particularly for, you know, for any of the disability-related grants, is the referral letter that gives as much information as possible, where specialist reports are available from audiologists or ophthalmologists or any of the other specialists, that really helps our assessing doctors, because our assessing doctors are not specialists. They are general practitioners, and they really need to have those reports to be able to do the assessment. Thank you, Chair.
Are you a lecturer?
No, I'm a social worker.
I will ask Madame to talk to the issue of the biometrics. But just to highlight the question that was raised on the meeting of minds. We've been engaging labor.
Something which is very difficult. Sometimes the boys assume that they are not. And you sit in the house and they are never. Difficult. But proceed, okay. When they are meeting.
I think it's well said, Chair, that it's very difficult because it becomes a tangle. We have a structure which is the bargaining forum engagement with labour, where we discuss all the different issues that we are going to be implementing for us to make sure that we change the working environment and become more efficient. So what became clear was that it doesn't help when we we put one process and not look at the end-to-end processes in terms of all the things that we want to change. For example, we need to look at making sure that our documents are scanned at source. We had started the process of back scanning all our files so that, for example, when the AG comes, we don't have a challenge of being able to find the files. Now, when we started the process of scanning at source, there was an issue that we were adding on the work that the employees were doing, so that was an issue for labor, but biometrics was yet another issue. So we needed to take to labor all the automated processes that we're going to be looking at to make sure that we change our environment and we become more efficient for us to be able to reduce costs of doing business. We did have an agreement in terms of what it is that we need to do. I'll ask Madam to talk to the rollout plan that we currently have. But again, when you raise the issue of the meeting of minds, it looks like we need to go and continue to engage because the minds are not quite connecting. Because now, in the next meeting, they said, no, 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 we didn't agree until such time that you address the issues of how quickly do people work if they do the biometrics. We can't roll out until that is resolved. But the ICT executive will talk to the issues of what is the plan for us to make sure that we improve our environment, ICT environment, to make sure that it can be quick for our employees to be able to use biometrics, but also at the same time that the clients will not wait for too long if the system is actually slow. So Mr. McClung will talk to that, and I will ask your partner to talk to the arrangement that we have with SAPO and what the role of SAPO is, but I think
Good afternoon, Honorable Chairperson, members of the committee and colleagues. With regard to the rollout of biometric solution, we have indeed started piloting the implementation. We started with 11 offices and then we increased them to 34. So overall now it are 35 offices covering about 500 users who uses biometrics to authenticate access to the corporate system software. And our intention is to incrementally grow this. We prioritize the Eastern Cape because it has a business decision in terms of the key areas of focus where we need to start. But once we're done with the teething issues with regard to the rollout, then we will finalize the program for national rollout. But so far, we have got more than 500 people authenticating by biometrics to access SOP in Eastern Cape last year and at 11 other offices nationally. And with regard to the features that might be being experienced, we are just dealing with the upgrade of the database to make sure that the mainframe database is able to respond to the load that is brought about by biometric image loading and so on. But that is pretty on course. Thank you.
Please, I can talk to Ron and then
I'll
talk to
Matt. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. I have noted the request for a detailed report on fraud, which we are going to prepare for the committee. But just to say that in terms of the main cases, but fraud cases that we have identified, and also where we have made referrals to law enforcement agencies, they mainly emanate from last year, where quite a number of our officials were changing
is related to payment of social grants and how the role of the court office. Honourable Masango, if you go to slide 27, actual slide 29, it gives a reflection of all the banks that we credit money into. What happens is that once the beneficiaries have chosen the account where they want to be paid into, including SACO and Post Bank. In Post Bank, we have two categories. We have those that are using the SACO card, and we have those that are using the Mzansi card. All of them, SACO is the one that does the direct deposit into all bank accounts of the 11.2 million recipients. So the direct money flows from the social assistance transfer moves from treasury to the SACO account receipt with the National African Reserve Bank, and then from those accounts we debit it through the bank into the direct account of the beneficiary. So what happens is that the relationship with SACO comes at the end of the system. So on the first of every month, all beneficiaries, 11.2 million, their accounts are debited, including those who go to cash pay points or go to SACO branches. So they choose where they go and withdraw their money. So the relationship with SACO comes at the special dispensation account in the places that they get to be subsidized should they be using the SACO card. So it's more a distribution channel more than a payment arrangement. So they don't do the payment on behalf of SACO. They do the distribution and the negotiation in terms of the type of account and how what kind of free transactions the beneficiary gets. So what happens is that out of the 11.2 million, 3 million goes to other commercial accounts, which we have given the credit example. 8 million goes to SACO. Of the 8 million that goes to SACO, about 7.6 go to National Payment System for withdrawals. Only 700,000 interacts directly with SACO, but with 500,000 going to the branches and 200,000 going to withdraw money at the cash payment. And these people, they are not consistently, you cannot say Rakata goes to the SACO branch. So depending on the day of payment, there are days where they choose to go to pick and pay, there are days where they choose to go to cash payment. So there's flexibility in terms of the utilization. So what we have done in the arrangement with SACO is that in areas where we know there's no banking infrastructure, SACO would go there and serve as a payment infrastructure or as a pay point or as an ATM, if I have to explain. That's what I'm sure that they
I think Rakata, you need to explain for purposes of honorable matter why do we need a SACO in terms of, I think it's important to go back to how did we end up with SACO, because I think that would explain the context. If it's clear, then I'm comfortable.
How is that? It's 25 minutes. I'm sorry, I didn't get you.
Thank you.
My the only thing I wanted to ask is not a question, it's a comment. In terms of the social relief fund, it really concerns me when Diane said they can only help if they have funds. So that to me says we are still going to continue to have all those kids walking barefoot to school without uniform. Now, this is directed to the committee as well. Is there anything we can do to have money pumped into the fund, into the social relief fund so that, because clearly there's no money. They cannot take care of all these children. So what is our role in that to help in making sure there's more money that can be put into the fund? Thank you, Chair.
The comment, let us turn to the comment. Status on the question. Can you respond at the close?
Thank you.
Can you keep this thing?
I've got a comment on the committee program.
This one? Which one? This one?
Our committee program.
No, no, committee program.
Next week, members, we will have the public hearing whereby the committee will engage with. Whereby the committee will engage with the public in terms of getting clarity with their oral submissions. And the government will be here just as observers and to listen to all the issues that will be emanating from the submissions of the public. And a week after, the department must come back to this committee to respond on all the issues that came during the meeting. And thereafter, in the same meeting, the committee will deliberate on the issues in terms of trying to come up with the amendments list of the bill. And on the 4th of March, we'll have what we call an amendment list, whereby we'll put all our amendments that we want to be incorporated in the amendment bill. That will be done by the assistance of our Southwick Delivery Advisor. In this process, there will be the advisor working on all elements that you want to. Yes, there will be legal advisor in terms of with the ages. And then on the 11th of March, we will go to a process clause by clause. Firstly, you conduct public hearings, which is the informal stage. The formal stage whereby we go clause by clause, chairperson outside the process of the president, and to how we go about the formal stage. The process is very too short. The chairman decided that we also need to look at the third term of the department report. So the same meeting will invite the department to come and present their third term. NTA, we have done NTA, and then we'll invite NTA on the same day, and then we'll have on the 17th, we'll do the bidding whereby there's AIDS incorporated to the annual bill of the bill. And then the 18th of March, we'll adopt the bill, and then we'll have a committee report of the process.
The department is supposed to go into an activist department, you can see the case.
We are committed with the process to pass this bill on the 18th of March, and then we'll also invite the department to present their head term about us. So that's all.
Table the
agent for GBV has not yet met. So, Chair, through you, on those committees that we have a meeting, especially after what transpired yesterday, Chair. And then lastly, Chair, the last time we got was transpired last yesterday now. Then lastly, Chair, the last foster care backlog report that we got was of October 2019, in November 2019, it is now February 2020. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
must also be taken into account. Alright? At the risk of banning my finance, with the power vested in me, can I declare the meeting closed?
Thank you.